Hi, I'm Stacey Jacobson, host of The Pulse by Bernstein. Join me twice a month as we delve into all the complexities that come with having and managing wealth. You'll get valuable insights on investing, planning, and more through conversations with wealth advisors, economists, entrepreneurs, founders, and philanthropists. Find The Pulse by Bernstein wherever you get your podcast and subscribe to ensure you never miss a beat.
Hey bosses, it's Derek here. Just a reminder that our Invest Like a Boss quarterly episodes are now exclusive to Patreon. Moving the quarterly updates to Patreon allows Sam and Johnny to be more interactive with you all and provide more transparency in their portfolios. In fact, this past quarter saw some of their biggest changes yet. Sam and Johnny both had new multiple 5- and 6-figure investments and sales. The guys break everything down on video, show visuals of their asset allocation, discuss their new strategies, and more in the new Q2 2020 update that is live right now. To access the show, head over to patreon.com/investlikeaboss. That's patreon.com/investlikeaboss, or check out the Become a Patreon tab on investlikeaboss.com. Plans start as low as $5 per month, and all funds raised go directly to show production costs to help us book more guests and create more free episodes for all. Thank you for your support and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
Hey bosses, this is Johnny, and welcome to episode 149 of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. I'm here with Sam Marks. Bill Perkins coming on soon. Sam, what's up, buddy?
Hey, Johnny. Hey, guys. Greetings from the wonderful, beautiful... Can you take a guess, Johnny?
Ski country. Tahoe, maybe? Where is that?
Good guess. Steamboat Springs, Colorado. My God, nice. Is it heaven out here in the summertime?
Woo. Oh, I like it.
I finally got a place to match your Sri Lanka.
Yeah, I'm in some gaudy looking place. You see this? Is that gold right here? That's the...
Once again, I'm fooled, wondering, is it a Zoom background or is it Johnny's new location?
It's my new location, my new hotel here in Aragon Bay, Sri Lanka. Good spot. Yeah, and Bill Perkins is sailing somewhere in the Med, I think. So I think he's either in Greece or he's in, you know, Croatia, one of those places.
Yeah, he likes to move around quite a bit. I think this is going to be a great interview. This is Invest Like a Boss 101, right? It's how do you make money? Where does money fit in your life? How important is it to happiness? And then once you figure out how to make money, what do you do with all your time? This is going to be good. Bill Perkins is a cool guy. I think everyone's going to really like hearing from him. And, you know, he made a fortune in the energy sector. He started a hedge fund. Most recently, he's been gallivanting around with Dan Bilzerian. And he is just all about living life. And that's what inspired him to read the book or to write the book, Die With Zero, which Johnny picked up and was inspired to bring him on the podcast.
Yeah. And actually, so I've been following Bill Perkins for a while, you know, really since he started hanging out with Dan Bilzerian, you know, the Instagram king. I'm sure all of you guys know who he is. And Bill kind of came on board a couple of years ago, just like he was newly divorced. He was kind of like the cool dad vibe. But he seemed like he was having a great time. And like very quickly, within a few years, he kind of, you know, started dating one girl very seriously and kind of like stopped, you know, that party lifestyle. You know, if anything, I think he actually deleted most of those super party photos off his Instagram to keep it more kind of PG-13. But when he came out with that book, you know, just the title, Die With Zero, I thought, you know, this actually makes sense because even for me, I'm planning for the worst. I'm planning, you know, what if I live till I'm 100 and I have all these bills and, you know, no money comes in. But at the same time, first, I have no one to leave the money to. And second, even if I had kids, I wouldn't want to leave them more than 100K each or something. Like, I don't think kids growing up with a bunch of money makes them happier. What are your thoughts, Sam?
You know, everyone's heard of the trust fund babies. Most people know some kids that have gotten royally screwed up by too much money. But I do think that at some point, you're a little bit more immune to it. You know, if you inherit $5 million when you're 15, probably not a good thing. If you inherit $1 million when you're 35, and maybe you don't know you're going to inherit that $1 million, you're probably okay. And it's probably going to add value to your life if you have good work ethic and you have good life principles. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think there's certainly too much money. And I think timing is really important to not spoil, you know, the 20s and 30s of someone's life, but giving them some comfort later in life, or to, you know, stop working that corporate job and start living a little bit. Yeah, I think it can be a good thing.
Yeah, I definitely think so too. And I think the key point that you made is not knowing or not expecting that money. Because if I knew I was going to get $1 million when I turned 35, guess what I would have done for my entire 20s and 30s? I would have just mucked about and I would have just partied, probably did heroin. I would probably just go crazy and then thinking like, all right, I'll be set anyways.
You almost most definitely wouldn't have done Muay Thai fighting in Thailand, but
well, I would have done more of it.
yeah, exactly. Who knows? Yeah. So, but this is, you know, what Bill's going to talk about and what's in the book. It's what we're all about. It's living life to the fullest while you're able. This is already, I think, a trend that people are starting to identify with more. Millennials value experience more than material goods. But for most people, they just didn't have an option, right? They felt mm-hmm. like, especially if you grew up in the US, you feel like you have to get out of college. You have to immediately go on that hustle. And then you turn around twice and you're 35, 40 years old. And you're like, damn, I've only taken like a week long vacation every single year just to my neighboring state or something like that, right? So now with COVID, this movement is getting a massive shot of adrenaline because people are now for the first time like, wow, you know what? Maybe I can go work in Southeast Asia. I can go work remotely, even for my current job for a year and get some of these rich experiences in life that I was maybe putting off into retirement or something like that. So I think the world and to use a term that Bill talks about, the velocity of money is changing with COVID.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. At the same time, we're growing older and we're living longer. So that money that we, you know, I mean, like, what would we do if we grow, you know, if we live to 110 and we run out of money when we're 80 or 85? That's a fear as well. So there's a lot of questions I want to ask Bill. And I think there's mm-hmm. going to be, I think this book is well needed to spark that discussion of, is it better to be super conservative, ultra conservative, you know, live off the 4% rule, maybe even the 3% rule, or are we just wasting our time now, our youth, our happiness, everything we work so hard towards? What are we working so hard for no reason? So let's get these answers from Bill, and then let's come back after the interview and let's discuss what we're going to do with our lives and what we would recommend to others.
I like it. Let's get into it with Bill Perkins and Johnny FD.
Bill Perkins, super excited to have you. Welcome to Invest Like a Boss.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Where actually are you right now?
I'm in Capri. I'm at a little hotel on the side where we just brought the laptop and set up shop right in their front desk because I was roaming around the beaches out there. I don't, you guys can't see that. It gets blown out, but that's what I've been doing. Hanging nice. Out in Capri.
Capri? Where is that? Is that Greece?
Italy. Capri, Italy.
Man, you are moving fast. I can't keep track of where you are.
You got to keep moving or you die. I don't know. At least that's, at least I'm like a shark, you know, you got to keep swimming. So, no.
Very cool.
No, I just, you know, it's one of my passions is travel. And so taking advantage of the time to travel when I can.
I love it.
It's really hard to travel now. So.
Yeah. But I've heard that if you have enough money and a yacht, you can skate by some of those things.
You could do some things. Actually, you don't really need a yacht or anything to go to Croatia. You just you just have to have a COVID test within mm-hmm. 48 hours of going to Croatia. And then once you're in Croatia, you're in the EU for, even if you're there for 2 weeks, then other EU countries will begin to accept you. So I know it sounds like, oh, you got a bunch of money, you went there, but people were flying commercial in the back of the bus on these super discounted tickets and all the hotels are super, super discounted. So actually right now, the world's half off in terms of traveling. So if you can, you know, take the time to go on the internet and read the rules on entry, et cetera, you're going to get a great deal. You're going to get a lot of value for your money.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm actually in Sri Lanka right now and all hotels are 75% off. So we were staying at a 5-star place. That's normally $250 a night, you know, with just breakfast. And we got it for like $95, including all meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And these deals, yeah, you've never seen it before.
Yeah, if the traveler is now treated like a king or queen. And so it's great. And there's the other thing is a lot of times when people go on summer vacation, they save up their money to go on summer vacation or vacation. Mm-hmm. They're generally going when everybody else is and it's mobbed. And so you don't get a fuller experience, or it's a little bit of a hassle, and it's not mobbed. It's pleasant. You know, it's not over capacity. It's actually probably 50% of capacity, which, you know, unfortunate for the shopkeepers, but great for the traveler.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, it's not even just during this pandemic. I realize for years now, the greatest kind of travel hack is just going slightly off season. You know, whether it's going, you know, to Europe in like April, May instead of June, July, August, or going in September, right, like when everyone else, you know, has to go back to work or back to school.
Yeah, if you can find the valleys and not go during the peaks, you're going to just have a much better experience, I believe.
Yeah, definitely.
Unless you're, you know, a 19-year-old, 20-year-old kid on gap year and you just want as many kids and girls as possible, then, you know, going is raving, you know. But for my age group, you know, you kind of like it a little bit quieter.
I can see that. Yeah, I'm starting to get there as well. How old are you, Bill?
I'm 51.
Okay. I'm 39 this year. And one thing that I had noticed is I used to think that money was kind of the big resource that we all aim to have. You know, that's kind of the most finite thing. But as I'm getting older and as I meet more people who have money, I realize time is equally important. And without the time, money is almost a little bit useless.
Yeah, it definitely is. And you know, that's the obvious example is when you're out of time, you're going to die. There was actually a movie kind of like that, In Time, with Justin Timberlake, I believe. But, you know, most of the people I know that have acquired wealth, they're older, they're on the other side. They're converting that money into time savers, you know, whether it be, you know, people think private travel is about luxury. No, it's about time. The plane takes off when you get there. Your luggage is with you, you know, it's 4, 5, 6 hours, you know, of saving time. The staff, et cetera. Yeah, it's nice not to do those things, but it saves you time so you can do the things you want to do. So, you know, if you have a version of a time machine, whether that be the plane that goes faster or a service that makes things easier for them to do, you're going to get their money in exchange for giving them back their time.
That definitely makes sense. And actually, there's a third aspect that a lot of people overlook is the kind of youth or vitality to even use that time and money. And that's something I didn't really realize until I sat down with a guy who was retired. You know, he retired late at like, you know, 75. And he says he has all the time in the world, all the money in the world now, but he just doesn't have the energy to go do the things he wanted to do. And that's why your book, Die With Zero, resonated with me so much.
Yeah, I talk extensively about that book, that point in my book. You know, the idea that you can delay gratification of certain experiences indefinitely or to later in life is kind of, you know, in the culture, or, you know, people think about it, you know, think they can, but it's not true. And basically you get no gratification. You wind up working for nothing. You know, there's certain experiences that are meant for certain periods in your life, either because of your health, right? Your health declines. You know, I won't be skiing at 90. I have back injuries and all sorts of things, right? Bone density, lung capacity, you know, you become fatigued. They're not enjoyable. You know, walking cities where you're like, oh, I'm going to walk all around Paris. And then when you're older, you're like, I'll walk a block and I'm going home. You don't get as much Paris. There's also your attitude, right? There's certain things that you enjoyed in your 20s or 30s that you don't enjoy anymore. You know, it's just, I don't know what it is. It's just temperament. Maybe I need to go into the research and figure out like, why don't I like these things anymore? You're just out of it. You know, like glow stick days in a club. You know, those days are pretty much gone for me. You know, you know what I mean? Like maybe once every 2 years you could get me, or if you, you know, get some good alcohol in me, I'll go out for an hour, but it's not my thing anymore. When, you know, 15, 20 years ago, I would have I loved just going out and dancing and glow sticking and whatever it was. And so, you know, I emphasize in a book that, you know, you don't have just one death. You have different parts of your life that die, different seasons, and certain experiences are meant for certain seasons. And then that, because of, you know, you basically acquire money and resources to convert them into experiences you want, right? Getting the when is just as important as the what, right? You're like, oh, I really am saving up and I want to climb Mount Everest, right? Well, that's probably not doing that while you have kids, right? You know, you have young kids, you got to be at the house. You can't be away for a month. You know, you got to stay there for 3 weeks just to get acclimated to the thing. You got to go up and then there's a certain amount of risk now that you have dependents that maybe you won't take, right? So it's before you get married or after the kids out of the house. But if the kids are out of the house, if you're a late dad, right, and you're 65 or 70, I'm not saying that you can't do it, but it may be less enjoyable to you or you may not be able to do it. And so getting the ordering right is very, very important.
So I 100% agree with that. And I think, so here in Sri Lanka, it's a surf town. I'm on Aragon Bay on the East Coast. And there's a bunch of guys, you know, in their early 20s who have no money, just broke. They're just kind of living day to day. They're eating, you know, just like the cheapest food possible, but they're enjoying the crap out of their lives. All they do is they surf all day. They have some beers at sunset. And, you know, they hang out and jam on the guitar at night. And they go home with, you know, with $100 in their bank account, but they're super happy. They're happier than I am. They're having more experiences than I am. And sometimes I look at them and I wonder, who's the idiot? Is it me or is it these guys for not saving for the future? Is it me with, you know, all the money saved up for my future that I will never use? Maybe I'll die before I get to spend it all. Or is it these guys for maybe not even planning for that future?
You can't really answer that question. It depends on what do they want and what do you want, right? But the real question is, are they in balance of what they want? Like, I think they can at any time dial it in, go start earning money and allocate it for the things you want. Like if you just start life, right? If you kind of knew before what you wanted and you said, these are the experiences I want from cradle to grave or from wherever you are to grave, right? That's going to have a certain spend pattern and a certain amount of capital that you'll need, right, at certain times in your life. And so, you know, you may look at them and say, that's what I want to do. Like if you're like working and slaving away in your job, but all you want to do in retirement is surf and be in a hut and drink beers on a beach like these guys, well, you're wasting your time working. Like you are working for nothing because you don't need the money for that experience, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe you can upgrade it a little bit, right? Or if you just want to play chess, I love playing chess, speed chess. Like if all I want to do is play speed chess, like I need to quit my job. I can play chess all I want as opposed to sacrificing my time for, you know, to acquire money to play chess, right? I have other goals other than that, and I want to have impacts on other people's lives. So I do give up some of my time and energy for money, right? Because I'm identifying the things that and experiences I want out of life that will cost me. So this is a very, very, you know, personal question, but with a mental model, you can start answering those questions for yourself, right? The proper mental model that knowing that your life is going to end, your health is going to decline, and knowing the experiences you want by decade, like, or by every 5 years or 2 years, whatever you want to do, but making sure like, okay, within these 5 years, I want to have these experiences. Within the next 5 years, I want to have these experiences, et cetera. If you think those things through, I think you'll make a more correct decision for yourself, right? And you won't be an idiot. Because having the life you want is, I have no judgment. Like there's no judgment of what life. I just want you to make sure that you optimize and get the most out of it of what you want. And so it's like, I want this and I'm going to go hella skiing. I want that, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, here's your plan, right? I just want to chill on the beach and drink brews with my friends. It's like, okay, here's your thing. Like here's, you get more on the beach days, right? Stop going into the office. You can go on the beach right now. You'll get more beach days and you'll be a happier human, you know? And that's kind of what the book is about. It's about maximizing your life, your fulfillment, your memories that you're going to create for yourself and that you're eventually going to retire on.
Yeah. And I definitely think this book is perfect and applies for people who maybe are, you know, already have some money. There's plenty of people that listen to this podcast that have saved a ton of money. They're either a little bit older now, or they built and exited a company. My co-host Sam Marks, for example, he exited a company for, you know, more than, you know, between 10 and 100 million. And he has that cash now and he's young. He's, you know, 36, 37, and he could be spending it, enjoying his life more instead of trying to build more and more money. And for him, you know, it's like, I always ask, why are you working so hard? Like you're enjoying life now. And I think that's the big question. Cause even for me, even with a much smaller net worth, I don't really have any plans for this money when I die. I don't have any kids. And even if I did, I don't think it would improve their life by leaving them a ton of money. Like, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that like kids are actually better off inheriting millions of dollars? Or
I've gone back and forth on this in terms of giving them money and taking away that obstacle, which is like, you know, some of the greatest joys you get in life is facing a hard problem and overcoming it, no matter what it is. And money, you know, I've done that in one field and I've been rewarded with money, and giving that to my kids, which is transferable in all types of fields, removes that, you know, removes the game or the challenge. On the other side, there's a certain level of security, less anxiety and stuff like that. So I have a finite number that I want to leave to my daughters at the appropriate age. And that's it, because I don't want to ruin them. Who knows the number I've chosen to ruin them. I think it's individual to the kid. But going back to your partner, I'm going to hazard a guess that he's good at something and it's become a habit, and he's disconnected from the other parts of his life of what he wanted. Like when he probably started, he's like, I want this, 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 and this, and I'm going to do this job and it's going to give me a bunch of money and I'm going to be able to do this, this, this. And now he's spent so much time getting good at what he's doing. He's addicted and habituated himself to doing that. And he's disconnected from what he's working for. And so the numbers are just, he just wants higher numbers. And, you know, I hope that's not the case. You know, what I really ask is like, what is the thing or experience that you need the money for that you're working for? Like, if he can attach it to like, hey, I really want the experience of owning a 260-foot yacht. It costs this much money and this much maintenance and blah, 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 blah. And I want to do it for 3 years. I could be like, okay, you have identified the thing and experience that you want to have, and you're now working towards it. But if you're just working for Space Invader numbers, whatever, you're like kind of wasting your life. It's like, great that you're providing a service to humanity in an indirect way by starting your business or doing whatever you're doing, but you're not optimizing, maximizing your ride. And I think part of that is people get on autopilot, especially business people, especially successful business people, because generally they are laser focused. They're failing and succeeding, and they're trying and they're going left and right and over the hill and under the hill. They're doing everything they can to do this, and they get good. And then they're like, copy, paste, repeat, copy, paste, repeat, copy, paste, repeat. They become kind of this robot of business, and they've lost their humanity and being in touch with what they want out of this life. And I want them off autopilot for their own sake to get in touch with what they want and experiences they want to have, so they can have what I think a fulfilling life for them, a more fulfilling life, so that at the end of their years, they won't be like, what the fuck did I do in my life? You know what I mean? Like, what was I doing?
Well, I know. Yeah, it's all right. I know for me and for a lot of people, especially growing up in California, what we think we want is, you know, to live in a big mansion, to drive a Porsche, to drive drive a exotic car, to go to parties and, you know, pop bottles of Dom Perignon and kind of have that seemingly unattainable lifestyle. And for most people, they will work basically their whole lives trying to get to that point. And maybe they get it, maybe they don't, but it's because we didn't have it yet. A lot of times people will just think like, you know, I need to get to that, you know, $100 million mark or whatever the number is, so they can start living like that. You've hung out with a lot of these guys, with Dan Bilzerian, but also all his friends, but also all your hedge fund friends. Do you think that lifestyle of, you know, of the big parties, you know, tons of hot girls, Dom Perignon, you know, Ferraris, Lamborghinis, do you think that actually has made these, like, do you think, you know, it's actually something people are like, yeah, you know what, I got it, this was worth working for? Or do you think a lot of them would have been happier if they had not worked as hard and just enjoyed life more doing something else?
I think they would have enjoyed it. My experience is they really, when they get the thing which has been advertised to them, that this is, you know, they have this cartoon vision in the movies and rap videos of this is life and this is what's going to make you happy. And I had like a Lamborghini, a freaking car I can't even remember, you know, another 300. And I realized I'm not a car guy. I don't even like this. You know what I mean? Like, why? What am I doing with this Spider 528 or, you know, McLaren thing or whatever it is, the car I had, you know? And I was just like, I don't even like it. I feel like a douche in this car, you know? Like, it just, and all the ostentatious type stuff. And I realized I don't like stuff. I'm not a stuff guy. I'm a ball cap, jeans and shorts type of guy. I love to travel. I love learning new things about cultures. I like history. I like knowledge. You know, I like science. I like lectures. You know, I'm just that guy. And so, you know, I realized like some of the things that, you know, the amount of wealth that I've acquired, like, I'm like, okay, I need to pile it into causes and charitable events that I like and enhancing these experiences, you know, and travel, et cetera. And so, you know, I think people is like, I want to get wealthy. You know, I want to remove the stress. But then after you've got survival and removing like just the stress of living on, the kind of what you want experience you want out of life, I think we're disconnected. We need to get off autopilot and not the advertising. Like you want the big blingy watch and the so-and-so. I mean, yeah, we all want women when we're young, right? Like we think like if we get all these things, we want the girls. I find out girls, not really, they don't really give a rat's ass about that. They want you to be kind and funny, you know? You know, like everywhere I go, I mean, guys are crushing it in clubs. They don't have any money. I see people crushing all the time. You know, the broke artist, the broke singer artist will have more girls than the richest guy in the club, period, end of sentence. You know what I mean? There's something to be said there, right? Like he has some value add. And so, or the comedian at the club, the broke comedian, the funny guy. I mean, those comedians are crushing it. I'm telling you, I watch a lot of comedy. I see them afterwards. Beware, ladies. They're sharks. But, you know, what I'm trying to get at is that we really aren't just getting off all the pilot, meditating, thinking about what experiences we want, going out and discovering what makes us happy. We get sucked into this advertised, you want the McMansion and you want the car, like I, in my case, and you want the fancy thing. And turns out, no, I don't. Mm-hmm. I could give a rat's ass.
But do you think that it's like, you know how like our parents would say, don't touch the stove, it's hot. Do you think it's one of those things where we need to have experienced it ourselves first to get to that point where we can say, you know what? Yeah, we've partied at these mansions. We've had this lifestyle for a year or two. Now I really realize it's not for me and it never was for me. You know, I've owned the Lamborghini. I don't need it anymore. Do you think you could have learned those lessons without doing all that?
Well, I want to say two things. One is, you don't need to own the yacht. You just got to have a friend that owns the yacht, right? Like as long as you can just go to the party, you don't need to own it, right? And then you can experience and figure it out for yourself. You know, I'm a hard way learner. I'm one of the guys that's like has to learn from his own mistakes. You know what I mean? My dad said there's three types of learners. People who learn the hard way, people who learn the easy way, and people who never learn, right? You just don't want to be in the never learn category, right? The easy way would be, look at all these other people. That really isn't satisfying, right? There's empirical data, there's psychological studies, et cetera. We don't need that. And you know, the hard way is you go do it, you spend a bunch of money, you figure out you don't like it, and then you don't repeat, right? I tend to be in the hard way. Some categories, I'm a never learner, at least yet, you know? And so I you know, just depends on who you are. You know, I think the most, the easiest path is to be the easy way learner and learn from other people's mistakes and all the information that's out there.
Yeah. Good advice. So let me ask, do you think you would have been happy retiring like much younger? So, you know, like what was your net worth at like 25 or 30 or 35? If you had retired with that amount, do you think that you would be happy, you know, spending that, drawing down on that for the rest of your life?
So I think we broke up a little bit, but I think the question is would I be happier, you know, with less money and then drawing down on that for the rest of my life than less working? And so one of the things I've done is, and this is kind of either the blessing and curse of technology, is that my office is here, right? My office is where I go. And one of the things is like, if I had to be in an office or away from like the thing I love to do, which is travel, I would have quit a long time ago, right? Mm-hmm. And I honestly, here's an interesting conversation. Like when I was starting my hedge fund, I flew over to Germany to talk to some investors and, you know, there were big German dollars coming in and they were like, oh, you know, they saw my Instagram, my life or whatever. And I said, listen, if you're going to try and take away my life from me, I'll quit. I don't care. Like, you're not going to change who I am, right? Like you cannot buy my life, right? And I made that very, very clear that if you think I'm going to stop Twitter battling or Instagramming and traveling around the world and documenting my travels, like, you know, you got the wrong guy, go invest in somebody else, save your money. Right. And I'm very adamant about that. And I have to be adamant about that about myself, because otherwise I can become habituated into staring in front of a screen, natural gas, whatever. And I'm like, I also changed my trading style to be more of a seasonal trader instead of everyday battling, you know, you know, high frequency trading, because it was sucking up too much of my life. And I was like, can I find balance? Can I do what I'm doing and still enjoy life and going out? And luckily, technology allows me to do everything from my phone, right? Mm-hmm. You know, people think I'm not in the office. I'm on the boat, but I'm really working, you know, and they think, hey, Bill, why aren't you listening to me? It's because I'm actually working right now. It's a better office view, but on the whole, it's expanded my experience of life, and I've had more fulfilling experiences and more experiences to look back on and get memory dividends, et cetera. So for me, I found balance to be able to do what I can do. I think if I were in an office, I would have quit a long time ago at a lower number, much lower number, like one-tenth, you know, one-twentieth.
So it sounds like, I mean, from kind of like my point of view, kind of the ultimate, you know, like balance would be to make a ton of money, you know, in your what 20s or 30s, or maybe, you know, up to your 40s. And then sometime before you can, you know, you kind of start going downhill health-wise and energy-wise to start actually spending it and finish, you know, your life at 85, 90 or whenever we die with, you know, without running out. But at the same time, without a big amount of money that we just never spent, you know, and definitely, you know, don't hold the money until you're 75 and then start spending it in the last 5 years when we're not healthy anymore. But do you think that?
Yeah. No, go ahead. I think like, you know, the thing is balance at each mm-hmm. age range, according to who you are, you're going to have some balance. Like there's certain experiences in your 20s, right? Like they're meant for your 20s. Like mm-hmm. don't fucking rip off your 20s. You know, you'll hate yourself later on, or at least your 20-year-old self, not your complete self. Like for ripping yourself off for certain experiences. Yeah, it'd be great in your 30s, but then you're like, oh crap, I'm married and I got kids and things I thought I'd be doing when I was 30s with this money, I'm not doing, you know? You're still having joy, you're still having a good life, but like you realize like certain things have passed, right? And so, you know, if you're mindful of your path and what you want and you balance, like I'm okay with people making money until the day they die, as long as they spend it. Just gotta spend it all and convert it into experiences. Otherwise, you're working for, you're just a robot, right? You're not maximizing your life. And so in order to maximize your experiences, your fulfillment of life, your ride, your one adventure, you need to be really conscious about your health each decade, what experiences you want to go in each decade, and your resources that you have. That's your money, your time, and your health. Those three resources. We need to know where we're at and where we're gonna most likely be at each phase, and then slot the experiences accordingly. Then you'll have a full and rich life, and you'll die with zero regrets. You know, having no money when you die, dying with zero is one way to get there, right? Mm-hmm. But that's how you have a fulfilling, great life and you know, meaningful life according to you, not according to me. I don't, if your life is like, hey, I want to be in a club chasing women and glow sticks for the day I die, then that's your life. You know what I mean? You know, plan accordingly, you know? So, you know, I think the mental model is one size fits all, but the life is definitely not one size fits all.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. So that actually is perfect for our next question. This is from our Patreon group. David Swanner asks, after financial independence is achieved, how does a person mentally shift from an aggressive savings investing mindset to a more abundant mindset with increased spending on meaningful hobbies or experiences?
Yeah, I think that's one of, you know, I don't have the exact answer for this, but I will give a suggestion, you know, because when you get so focused on accumulating wealth, right? Mm-hmm. To accumulate is scary for people. Like seeing that number go down is like, oh my God. And there's fear associated with that. Like our egos are attached to those numbers. So, you know, one of the things we got to do is detach our ego and shift our fear of running out of money to a fear of not living life. Like I have a fear of, like, you know, my biggest fear, you know, which can borderline on irrational, is 10 years from now, looking back when I'm 51 and going, oh fuck, Perkins, you wasted, God damn it, you wasted your time doing X, Y, and Z, you know, and not living your life. And you were chasing money or chasing dollars or didn't spend time with your daughters or missed a soccer game or whatever. You know, and when you're earning money and you're focused on balance sheet numbers and P&Ls and EBITDAs and all these metrics, your fear is those numbers going awry, right? And so we need to shift what we're afraid of, right? Or lose that fear and lose that ego attachment to this number being higher and higher, and attach our ego to happiness and fulfillment and experiences that we want to have. That's my partial answer. I think there's other people out there that will probably give better answers to help you do that. You know, Tim Ferriss is for one, and you know, some other guys out there who talk about ego and fulfillment, but it's the direction you want to be, right? I'm at the top level of optimization, and then there's these sub-optimizations. Like, well, how do I get my brain to think this way, right? And I think it's shifting what your priority should be and recognizing your fears and eliminate those fears.
I like it. So another question from the group is, what do you think about the 4% rule, which is that common, you know, drawdown that, you know, when we retire, we start taking out 4%, you know, per year, and with, you know, and every year we tack on to you know, a little bit more to adjust for inflation. And it's a very safe way to be able to, you know, not run out of money before we die. You know, it should last 30, 40 years.
I don't like those rules. Particularly because you don't draw down on the principal, right? A lot of these rules that I've seen, and I'm not necessarily the 4%, but is basically you have this stack of principal that is potential energy that you're not converting into experiences, right? And like, I mean, even for just the average person, like I don't want $200,000 on my deathbed. I want $200,000 worth of memories and experiences that I can, that I've had with my loved ones and that on my deathbed, right? And so a lot of these rules, and I'm not saying the 4% rule definitely does this because there's somebody like, no, that exactly gets me at zero. You know what I mean? But like, I like deliberate planning of getting close to zero at death, right? I want you to survive and I want you to have the experiences allocated by age bucket. So the 4% rule says basically, hey, deny yourself certain experiences at 50 or 55 so that you have this big sack of money on your deathbed, you know? So I would adjust that such that it matches your consumption of experiences. And as you get older, a lot of people think you need, you know, in JP Morgan private client services, these wealth services, they have papers out like how hard it is to get their older customers to decumulate, to spend down. And the reason is they can't, they just don't have the energy. They don't have the will, or they just don't have the health. And so their time has passed. They talk about the go-go years in retirement, the slow-go years and the no-go years, right? Mm. And rules such like the 4%, they push a lot of money into the no-go years or the slow-go years, right? I do think it's great to get people saving, you know, to get to this. I think it's good that people are thinking of formulas and ideas and metrics, but this is not the best way to optimize your life.
I can definitely see that. So a question I have is, why did you write the book? I mean, you obviously don't need the money. I'm sure you're not trying to be an author, you know, live off of the author's salary. Like, what made you write this book?
No, I've been blathering about this stuff with friends for, you know, like years, right? Like, and people have been getting value out of it. Like, you shifted my thinking about this. You shifted about when the timing of giving an inheritance is, whether you give them, if you're going to give them nothing, nothing, but if you're going to give them something, you know, it's like, hey, don't wait until you die. 60-year-olds, like, they may not even be able to move. They may not be alive. It's a random date in the future. Like, that's not given to your kids. That's given to some adults who may, you know what I mean, who may just be sitting home watching Jeopardy, right? So, you know, and people have gotten value. And I feel that, you know, in my wildest dreams, that this book could change the velocity of money. Not only do I help the person who reads the book optimize their life and give them a mental model, have to optimize their life, but when they start converting that cash and that resources into experiences, the money doesn't go into outer space. It goes into somebody else's pocket. It goes into the travel agent, the boat guy who's driving the boat, the restaurant, the guy who guides you up hiking the Himalayas or whatever it may be, right? And so that money spins around the globe, it spins around your community and helps those people as well. You know, you take that money out of the mattress and put it to work. And so this book can help a lot of people fulfill their lives and help also other people on the other side, helping them fulfill, get their lives going, you know, gets the economy going, gets that velocity of money way, way up. So that's my delusional big dream for this book. That's why I wrote it. I wanted to change the culture.
Yeah, I like it. And if anything, it'll create less trust fund babies in the future and force people to, you know, to kind of like learn these lessons themselves, and which I think would be a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like, you know, people want to live. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, somehow we get cultured into this mindset, right? You know, and I think, you know, the whole Social Security, the way Social Security was just like when you retire was just an actuarial thing. This is how much money we got coming in. This is when people die. This is when retirement is. And this is when people should go live their lives. This wasn't rationally thought out about like, when can you best convert your money into experiences? The utility of money declines for individuals, right? Like somebody on their deathbed, the utility of money is almost zero, right? Laying in the hospital, right? And somebody who's 33 at peak physical maturity and mental maturity, utility money is like super high, right? You can convert it into almost any experience you want. And so, you know, those spend curves and save curves, et cetera, weren't designed for fulfillment. And I'm about net fulfillment over net worth, right? That's where my focus is.
I like it. So like, when did you actually start having this you know, mindset or this spending style? Because from like an outsider's point of view, you know, I started following you, you know, I don't know, 3-4 years ago when you started hanging out with Dan Blazerian a lot. He was featuring you on his Instagram all the time. And it almost kind of looked like, he was kind of tired of all these kind of, people that were always busy working, he'd only see him once in a while. But, you know, you came along and you're like, hey, I got nothing to do. I'll come sail around the world with you. I'll have fun. I'll spend some money and enjoy life. Did you start living like this before you met Dan, or like, did he influence you at all to be like, you know what, let's step up a little bit more. Let me spend a little bit more money, enjoy life a little bit more.
Well, there's an interesting crossroads. So I knew Dan before he was Dan Blazerian, right? I actually, we got close because I got Dan to go to an emotional intelligence class, which everybody would probably freak out that. Like, yeah. So Dan, you know, I got Dan to go to an emotional intelligence class I went to. You basically go in and cry, and it's an LGT, large group therapy class, et cetera. And Dan, you know, went on and promoted his hedonistic lifestyle on Instagram and became Dan Blazerian. I got divorced kind of right around that time, when he was Dan Blazerian, and he was like, oh, I got the cure for you. You know what I mean? It's babes and girls. You like to travel, and here's all the babes and girls in life and whatever. And I was just like, well, you know, I was lost. I didn't know who I was. Mm-hmm. I was like, I had to rediscover my new role in life and who I was, mm-hmm. and what I wanted. And so, you know, I just hopped on in, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm still a dad, and I can't be complete damble. I can't go full Damblezarian. Mm-hmm. But I was having fun, and I enjoy Dan, and I've known him for a while. As far as like the philosophies in the book, I had, you know, different pieces of it hit me at different times, you know, and you know, I tell this story often is that when I was younger and I was broke on Wall Street, and you see tons of rich guys around, right? But they're older, right? I'd see all these rich guys, limos and whatever they're doing. And I would look at them kind of my arrogant look and just kind of like scoffing. I'm like, who cares? The guy's fucking old. Who cares if you're rich when you're old, you know? And that's a very ageist thing to do, because these guys are my age right now, right? Like I was totally clueless. I was totally clueless, but I was onto something, right? Like I was onto the fact that, you know, money has a declining utility as you age, right? And I was like, I want to get rich before I'm 30. You know what I mean? Like, I gotta get to this number. I didn't know what that meant and the things I'm gonna get. I had this cartoon idea of being rich, but you know, that hit me. I read this book called Your Money or Your Life by Vicky Robin and I think a guy named last name Dominguez. It changed my life. The book is basically about how, you know, there's many definitions of money, but the one definition that sticks is money is something that we exchange our time for. And therefore money is a representation of life energy. And so then I started, you know, and the book is very, very big on remove money out of the equation and look at everything in terms of hours of your time, right? So you figure out your networking after taxes, after transport, everything, like let's say, you know, $16 an hour, right? And that was my time value. And you look at a shirt and you'd be like, oh, that shirt is 1.5 hours of my time. Oh, I don't want to do that. I don't want to work 1.5 hours for that, right? And then so that helped me really sink into my skull, like I'm exchanging hours of my life for X, Y, and Z. And everything I saw was in hours, even a cookie. Like if I was like, I need a cookie, I'd be like, well, that's an hour on a treadmill to maintain my weight. You know what I mean? Do I really want to eat this chocolate chip cookie? A lot of times it was yes. and I would go on the treadmill, you know, but experiences with my family members. And so I would have, it was kind of like this kind of idea was kind of like, I don't know, like the movie The Usual Suspects, right? Like at the end, everything comes together, right? Like, it's Mr. Kobayashi. I don't know if everybody's seen the movie The Usual Suspects with Kevin Spacey or any kind of mystery movie where at the end, all these little hints come synthesized and you're like, you get it. It was this guy. This is how he did it and blah, 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 blah. You know, I guess around 40-ish, I was having debates and discussions with friends because all this had come to me. I was like, there has to be a formula. There should be a peak net worth. Your net worth should peak at a date, not a number. No matter what the, no matter where the number is, at a certain date, your earnings, the more money you earn, your utility goes down further. So you're really not getting net enjoyment, right? You're not getting net hours out of it, net fulfillment out of it. And so, you know, I would discuss and debate this and let maybe I can write a program to do this and really, really get on board with this. And so then I just decided to write a book. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So one of the, like the, you know, the life experiences that a lot of people think, you know, want, but is also a very easy way to lose half of your net worth and half of the spending money is getting married and getting divorced. What are your thoughts on that kind of after you've been through this whole process and what do you recommend to friends?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a risk taker. I think marriage is a very risky venture for everyone, but for me, the reward is worth it. I think life, for me, I like sharing shared experiences. When I travel, I like to have a buddy or a friend or a companion. When I go to the movies, I like to go with someone to the I want someone to love, and I want somebody to be a witness to my life, and I like to be a witness to theirs. And, you know, when I was in the single, free-loving, polyamorous, running around crazy with Dan Bilzerian days, it was a blast. I effing loved it. I'm not going to lie. But I had a talk with myself, and, you know, I had to figure out what my priorities were. And my number one priority, after talking to myself, was I wanted partnership, and that I would have to, in order to have a partnership with someone, with my current fiance, I would have to change some things about my lifestyle, you know? And it's a risk, right? Like, you go into it, like, people change, you know, they grow, they change, their interests change, et cetera. And it's like, you know, I'll take the risk. You know, it's worth it. You know, the breakups are painful. Like, it may cost you half your net worth or whatever it is. And sometimes, you know, you wouldn't have that net worth in ways. Like, emotional stability is such a huge part of running successful business and being making good decisions, right? When you're on tilt or you're sad or depressed, it's really hard to get shit done. And so if you have a great partner behind you, yeah, they're not doing the work and they're not doing the calculations, et cetera, but they are an integral part of you. And so I know guys like to say, or the moneymaker, sometimes it's females say, oh, you know, I got to give up half my net worth to this person. I was like, you know, an aware person would realize that they were an integral part of this. Now, like, obviously sometimes there's relationships where they were actually a detriment and you succeeded in spite of your relationship. I think it's risk reward. I don't mind scuffing up my face. You know, I don't mind losing money. I don't mind getting broke. I've been broke twice. After getting rich, you know, getting rich, get broke, got rich, got broke, got rich, you know? And so I'm like, it is what it is. Like, I'm going to ride this ride. Like, I'm going to ride this bitch called life hard. And, you know, and so part of that is emotional risk, you know, and having my heart broken and ripped out and messing up and making big mistakes. Like, I'm a mistake making machine. I tell people all the time, I'm not even just like a old version mistake making machine. I'm like the new X1000T mistake making machine. And that's part of life. Like, and so, so be it. Bring it on. I want the love.
I love it. And Bill, thank you for being so open and transparent about all this and also just passing down your knowledge through the book, but also through this interview. I think people are really going to appreciate it. People love the book. We have three more kind of rapid fire questions from the Patreon group. Two of them about investing. One is, you made a lot of profitable trades in the 2008 recession. Do you see any parallels in the market situation today kind of surrounding this lockdown?
Yeah. Well, I think some of the parallels that I saw, like I you know, when the pandemic was coming, we'd have shutdown. I think if you were kind of agnostic about the politics and look at what was going on, you realize that there was going to be shutdown, GDP was going down, there was a short. the area of where the Fed is pumping in money and inflating this situation as another response that you kind of knew was going to happen, right? Like there's just been, it's happened before, it's happening again, and now it's happening in ways that I didn't, exceeded my expectation. The thing that I can't time, but eventually some of these bubbles are going to burst. And if you remember, you know, it takes a while for debts and bankruptcies to kind of work their way through the system. And I think there's certain segments that are in for a world of pain coming up. Can I be wrong? Of course. But I see parallels there into the real estate bubble. People without revenue, these rent deferrals. I mean, somebody's getting hurt, right? Like either going to have rent deferrals and the people who own these properties are getting crushed and debt's getting crushed on that. Or these people are getting booted out. I mean, there's just a lot of carnage yet to happen that is being delayed. And one of the things in my experience is the longer you delay a pain, the greater it is in finance. And so that's a parallel I see.
That's good. I like it. And since you have a big background go ahead.
I want to give one caveat. Can I give one caveat to
please,
that?
Please. Yeah.
In 1918, we'd had a pandemic. Mm-hmm. Lasted for 3 years. Then came the roaring 20s. So one of the things I'm concerned is that COVID is here. We're going to wind up living with this thing. Like there's no, it's going to go away. Like this is going to be like the flu or whatever, and it's et cetera. If we ever get to normal with this kind of gasoline on the economy, mm-hmm. inflation is going to rip, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's going to be bubbles crashing and inflation ripping and stuff like that. Like, you know, so that's the only caveat that I'm worried about.
Okay. So sitting on cash might not be a good idea either.
Yeah, exactly. It's really a fluid situation. You gotta be aware of what's going on. But I think the first is going to be a reckoning and then a liftoff.
So can I ask, like, what do you invest in? Like, are you in index funds, individual stocks, real estate? Like what do you primarily invest in yourself?
I when you say invest in yourself, I generally invest in myself. I mean, there's a couple of things that, like, I'll putz around on a couple stocks. I'm invested in stocks that trends get accelerated by this pandemic, and then there's been a step function. So Amazon is basically a quasi-monopoly, we track credit card data, real-time credit card data, and it's just ridiculous. So any online shift, that world, online grocery shopping, people like that in that tech space where people are saving money, time, and convenience, like basically everybody got a crash course lesson on shopping online and using Amazon and using X, Y, and Z. And I think that trend is accelerated. And I think they will, you know, no matter what happens, they'll be around. So I have a small position in kind of like Amazon. I think it's SKYY or some sort of index fund, small position there. And then I have my bias to invest in these 18% yielding MLPs in oil and gas, because if you understand the nuances of the industry and what's going on, I feel that those cash flows are fairly secure. The world doesn't move without energy. And even when these companies go bankrupt, the FERC steps in on whether or not they can abrogate these contracts. And the FERC is very, very, very against abrogating any kind of pipeline contracts as such. So I think those dividends are safe. And I feel like 18% is, or 16%, whatever. Those are good yields.
That's amazing yields.
Yeah. They're ridiculous. And like, just like one, who came out, what it was, one of the MLPs came out yesterday. It was just like, yeah, we reaffirm our dividend. The stock shot up, like whatever. But like, you know, eventually the dividend will force the value of the stock. And so I have those in general, but mainly I invest in myself. I put more money into my fund because I feel there's, you know, chaos breeds opportunity, right? And so there's, you know, certain oil and gas companies that are going bankrupt, the production's going higher, but storage is so full, so it's bearish in the front, but then, you know, LNG gets pushed back. Like there's all these juggling balls. And if you're able to figure out these juggling balls, you're going to make a lot of money. And so I'm like, wait, I need to have more of my capital in the area I know the best. Because there's massive opportunities going on because there's chaos.
Makes sense. So speaking of energy, you know, everyone's thinking the future of energy is going to be, you know, everything's going to be electric. Tesla is going to be, you know, 100% market share. Like, what are your thoughts on this? Is oil and gas going away anytime
Tesla's
soon?
I do think that the politics and the technology of renewables is getting better. not worse. And I do think there'll be higher and higher penetration of renewables, but I do not believe in my lifetime, okay, or possibly in my kids' lifetime will be 100%. But I do think the penetration is going higher, especially with battery technology getting better, solar technology is still getting better, interest rates are low. So like when you have things with like solar, which is almost zero variable, very low variable, but you know, high CapEx, right? Interest rates are a massive consideration. When interest rates are 0.5% on the 10-year or whatever the hell it is, it's like, oh my God, you know what I mean? It's like almost free, right? And so the cost of solar, on a, the levelized cost of energy for solar keeps going down and down. We have an intermittency problem, but the cost of batteries is going down and the cost of, you know, of mitigating that intermittency is going down. And so I think the penetration is going up, but quite frankly, the energy density of renewables just isn't there for us to go to 100%. I think, you know, you don't nail me to a cross. I think that if you're in the climate, if you care about climate change, et cetera, there has to be nuclear. There has to be smart nuclear, you know, advanced nuclear. So
I like it.
My thoughts on that.
I like it. So last question is a fun one. You seem like you're super into the outdoors, especially the ocean. What attracts you to that outdoor lifestyle so much? And what are some of your favorite, you know, sailing spots in the world?
Oh yeah. I mean, Greek islands and Croatia, this is my first time in Croatia. I was blown away. You know, the beaches are different and the Greek islands are better, but the BVI and the USVI it's tops. It's just tops in the world. You get the topography, you get the animals, you get close to nature. You just really, I don't know, you just really feel connected with God, with the simulation, if you're a simulation guy. You just feel like, wow, this is what life is about. It's very calming to me. I just feel very, very, very at home and at peace. And, you know, I can just jump overboard. The water's like 80 something degrees, you know, 82 is kind of my swim temperature. Jump in, swim with eagle rays. I saw a whale jump beside the side of my boat. I seen dolphins. I mean, it's just kind of like, oh, all God's creatures are here and I get to witness this. I just feel very, very blessed and very, very grateful to be in nature and to witness that beauty. And so that has got to be some of the best sailing there is.
I love it. So guys listening, if you're saving your money to one day to be able to swim with the eagle rays, you got to do it now. Make a plan, because who knows what's going to happen in 10, 20, 30 years when you're finally able to retire.
Yeah. I mean, like everywhere I go, like everybody's like, oh, you live this fancy lifestyle. Every single place I go, there's somebody broke doing the same thing right next to me with a backpack, you know? So you do not, and they're having a great time. Sometimes they're having a better time than me. I'm all concerned about this and it wasn't this quality, whatever. I'm not living in gratitude, and they're in gratitude fucking having the adventure of their life, you know? And so there's a lot of people I envy, the people are having a great adventure that I'm like, wow, they're doing life better than me. And it's not because of the money.
I love it. Bill, thanks so much for coming on. If people want to find your book, Die with the Zero, where can they find it?
You can find the book everywhere. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your independent bookstore. You know, let's support the independent bookstores out there. It's a hard time for them out there. Wherever. It's audiobook, it's Kindle. You name it, you got it. You know,
I love it.
It's out there. So,
very cool. We'll have links to all that in the show notes. Bill, thanks so much for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Bang. Bill Perkins is the man.
He really is,
I love
man.
That guy.
He is the man. Like him, like he's like the cool dad of Dan Bilzerian. If Dan Bilzerian had kids, I would hope he'd be as cool as Bill.
I kept thinking you were talking to some like 26-year-old kid that had made it hanging out in Capri. Like his voice is young, his spirit's young. I mean, not that he's an older guy, but yeah, it's great. And the narrative is awesome. The narrative is awesome. Yeah. I keep thinking back to my aunt and uncle are the perfect example. God love them. You know, typical American couple worked hard their whole life to save money and retire at 60. And basically at 60, my aunt got Alzheimer's and they couldn't travel. And then my uncle had a heart attack when he was like early 60s and died. And so they never really got to enjoy it. You know, they worked and stayed in Pennsylvania their whole life. And, that's obviously a sad story. And that's, I think the narrative is to get out there and find that balance. You can work hard, but make sure you spend it on rich experiences. Thought it was perfect. Yeah.
I agree. It actually came to me when I was at a Starbucks in San Francisco. Maybe it was a Coffee Bean, but I was sitting there on like a Tuesday, you know, 11 a.m. working on my laptop. And there was this guy, you know, probably 67, 68, sitting next to me. We start chatting. And he told me he had just retired that year before. And now for the first time in his life, he has all the time in the world and he has money. And I asked him, why is he sitting at a Starbucks on a Tuesday at 11 a.m.? And he said, he just doesn't have the energy to do anything anymore. He doesn't have, and you know, he wasn't even unhealthy. He just, you know, when like, and we all think that we're going to be different. Like when I was 20, I would look at someone when they're 30 and think, oh man, this guy's so old. I can't believe like, you know, he doesn't want to party till, you know, 9 a.m. anymore. Like I'm never going to be like that. I'm always going to be that young, you know, young buck with energy. Even when I'm 40, I'm still going to go raving. I'm going to start glow sticking and, you know, party all night.
Yeah.
Man, it happens to the best of us. It literally happens to all of us. And if you guys, you know, are in your 20s and you think that you're different, you're not. I promise you.
No way. No way. That's the first thing that goes, I think, is the hardcore partying, hardcore drinking. I talk to my friends now in mid-30s and they're like, dude, I can't even drink anymore. 4 or 5 beers, I wake up with such bad anxiety, I can't even tell you. I mean, that's just like a normal night in your 20s, right? That's 5 nights a week. So yeah, that's the first thing to go.
Yeah.
And it's true and like, for all things. Think about like skiing or I mean, surfing, you can probably do a little bit later, but you want to really do like hardcore downhill skiing and you wipe out in your mid-40s, 50s, that's a totally different fall than in your 20s or 30s. You got to get out on that slope, man.
Definitely. I mean, you know, even surfing, like I'm 39, I'm out there, everyone else is, you know, in their mid 20s and they're out for like 4 or 5 hours, no sunblock, you know, maybe they put some on like, you know, 5 hours ago, it's gone and no shirt and no, like they don't even bring water. I'm like, well, how are you out here for 5 hours with no food or water? And they just keep going. And every time, you know, they get to the beach with their surfboard, they run back out to get the next set. And I'm thinking, man, I get a set in, I'm going to chill. I'm buying mm-hmm. coconut from this vendor dude, you know, have some water, sit in the shade for 5 minutes and then go back out. But I'm sure when I was 21, I would have been that guy just running out, you know, like who needs food and water?
Yeah. Oh, those youngsters without their sunscreen. Damn it. Bastards. So Johnny, all this stuff, this is something that's interesting. We've talked about this before. What advice would you give to, like, after reading this, I'm sure most of it resonates with you. You know, what advice would you give to the 20-year-olds out there listening? How to optimize around life? Because this is a tough one.
So I understand what Bill's trying to put out there. And I think he's right for a very segment of people. I don't know if it's half the people or whatever the segment is, but if you're the segment where you know you're going to work really hard from when you're like, you know, whatever, 25 to 35 or 40 or something, 30 to 40, and you're going to make a ton of money, then this book is for you and this advice is for you. But if you're going to be, if you're in your 20s and you're going to slack off and just have fun and then still not work hard when you're 30 and you're just never going to get to it, this is probably the worst advice you'll ever get, is to enjoy the crap out of life now and not think about your future. Because the more conservative way, and what I would recommend to most people, is to work hard in your 20s and save everything. Because even if you're not earning as much as you would in your 30s, that compound interest, as long as you start saving, that first builds good habits, creates streams of income. But also, it's something that I think most people, if they don't start at some point, they're never going to do it.
Yeah, 100%. It's a tricky one, man. I think one thing that Bill said, that really resonated with me was just about like being forced into an office. And that, you know, whenever I travel for business that I don't want to travel for, I get really stressed. I don't like it. If I had, like, most recently I had to go to London on a business trip that I didn't want to go through, and it's like dealing with London traffic and underground and dressing up nice and having to be prepared at 8 a.m. and all this stuff is just like, I didn't want to do it and I really didn't like it. But as long as I can maintain location independence and be where I want to and organize my day the way I want to, I'm happy to put in a 6-8 hour, sometimes 10 hour work day. Cause it's like Steamboat right now. Saturday morning, I'm having my coffee. I'm technically working. I'm going to work after this. Then in the afternoon, I'm going to go do whatever I want. I'll come back, do some work at night. I'm totally happy. But if you're forced into an office, I think that that's painful. And I think one of the best things people can do now is where they're not going to get burned out with work and have regrets is if you can work remote from wherever you want to be, whether it's Sri Lanka or Thailand or even your home city, if that's where you want to be, but feel like you have that bit of freedom. And then you can put in a heavy work day without having so much regrets over the last decade that you didn't do anything. You went out and explored and had all these new experiences and experienced different cultures.
Yeah, I can see that. And part of me wishes I would have done more travel when I was younger. Like one big regret I have is not going overseas for university, especially because there's so many programs out there that just, you know, it's basically free to go to college somewhere else. And that would have been a really cool experience. But at the same time, I'm pretty sure that if I was in Germany or, you know, Denmark when I was 20, I would have just drank every night and partied. I probably would have had learned a language or done anything cultural. I probably would have just partied my butt off. So maybe it was good that I waited until I was 27 to really even start doing any of that.
Well, you're making up for it now. And that's exactly what I did when I studied abroad when I was 20 in Switzerland. In fact, I went over for all the wrong reasons. You know, I'd been arrested 5 times my freshman year for underage drinking. And I'm like, this sucks. I can't even drink in college like everybody else. And then when I saw there's this opportunity to go study abroad in Switzerland, I looked up the drinking age and it was 19 years old. I'm like, wow, I can go over there and drink all summer. But I think the reason that studying abroad when you're that age, no matter where you are, you know, if you're in Asia studying abroad, if you're from South America going and studying on another continent, I think the reason it's so profound is because it shows you a different style of life that in a lot of ways is totally counter to what you're used to. If you're American and you go to study in Switzerland, you're seeing something, a totally different type of lifestyle, immersed in nature, much more work-life balance. And you're going to meet people that you never knew existed. When I was in Switzerland, I met a guy that was working on the ski slope 4 months a year, and he made enough money in those 4 months every year to spend the other 8 months surfing wherever he wanted to. And I was like, holy crap, I did not even know that that was an option, that you could organize your life in that way. All I knew was the American rat race. So I do think that like studying abroad or at least getting some international experience early in life to show you a different type of lifestyle is extremely, it's a really profound experience.
Yeah, I definitely think so as well. And I think like to balance happiness, that's the way to do it. But if you want to be prudent and have money for your retirement, I would actually suggest like not doing any of that and just making as much money as you can when you're 25 or 30, you know, when you have the energy to work hard. But who I think this book is really, really for, and the people that would get the most value out of it, is people kind of like in Bill's shoes, right? Like how many friends do you have that have, you know, quite a bit of money saved, you know, more than let's say $500,000. You know, and, you know, especially like the millionaires, you know, how many of them are just collecting more money and not really having experiences besides like a 3-day, you know, party, right? Like they might go somewhere for a week, but how many of them are really enjoying life now in their 40s and 50s? And like, why are they collecting more money? Like, what are they going to do? Like, what's the difference between having 10 million and 20 million or 30 million when you're 60? Like I'd rather have the experiences when I'm young and I can enjoy it and have a little bit less money, but still have a cushion, you know, still have something. So I have something to live off of. But yeah, I would say for like anyone who's in their 30s or 40s and has, you know, not much saved, don't read this book and think it's your hall pass to go just party up, have fun. But for the people who have been working hard and, you know, like need to just kind of switch that mindset of, you know what, I've worked hard. I have a cushion. I deserve to enjoy myself now because that money is less and less useful as you get older.
That's spot on. Yeah. I think he had mentioned that it comes down to an age. Maybe there's a formula that's based around an age. And for those people out there that are sitting on a few million and they're in their mid 40s or 50s and they really have been not doing much, or maybe they've been accumulating more houses, more cars, then I think absolutely that's the narrative. On the other side of the token, the biggest fear in the world is not dying. It's not public speaking. It is outliving your money. And you don't want to be the 60-year-old with no money, because your ability to go out and earn money is a lot more limited in a lot of ways. And I think that would be a really sad end to even an amazing life. Even if you had amazing life up until 60, if you end up living another 15, 20 years and you're like, I don't know where my food's coming from. I don't even have money to take my kids or friends or loved ones out to dinner, things like that. That could really suck.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I don't want to be that old grandpa lining up for the soup kitchen, you know, with no money, like, you know, just stressed every day about how am I going to pay for things. Even if I had, you know, 20 years of amazing travel experiences, it's like, I'd rather be comfortable, you know, and be able to pay my bills and not stress about it when I'm older. But I think it's, you know, it's about the balance. I think I'll, you know, the way I'm doing it, I'm pretty happy with, where I'm enjoying life and I'm doing all these cool things now, but I'm still saving money. Could I take his advice and say, you know what, let me splurge a little bit more now? Yeah, definitely could. But I think the people that would really benefit the most are the people on the two extremes, where, you know, like, and like, I, from a lot of the friends I've met through you, actually, these guys, I can see, you know, they go all out and they party for a 4-day trip somewhere. You know, they fly out to Eastern Europe or something. They fly to New York, they fly to Florida, pop bottles of champagne, stay in a 5-star hotel, and they have the time of their lives for 4 days, but then they go back to work for, you know, 3 months or something, you know, 60 hours a week, 80 hours a week. Those are the guys, I think, if they read this book and they said, you know what, maybe instead of, you know, going all out with Dom Perignon or, you know, like a 76 Krug or something, let me just like spread that out a little bit and take 2 weeks or 4 weeks or 6 weeks somewhere, maybe on a boat, you know, instead of on a big yacht for a weekend, let me go on a small sailboat for 6 weeks. Mm. Let me enjoy kind of life like that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think also one of our Patreon, David Swanson's question was really good about, and you covered it with Bill, just about how do you, if you spend a life or whatever, 2 decades accumulating and making it, how do you switch your mental frequency to start just not making it, start enjoying it and turn that switch off? And Bill talked about it a little bit, that, you know, once, when you get really good at something, you tend to go back to it and keep doing it. And it's kind of getting this seam that's hard to turn off. And I think that's true. I think it's really challenging for people that have done something well for 20 years and gotten really good at it to say, you know what, I'm 40, I'm cool, I'm going to go coast and live in pajama pants in Chiang Mai, or whatever you want to do. Cause you always feel this need to get back into that sieve, into that groove. And I know personally that's been a challenge for me. It's, I think, part of the reasons I love getting back into startups and things like that. But I think over time, it's a hard switch to flick in overnight. But I think over the course of a few years, it becomes a lot easier, and you'll find a lot more enjoyment out of life.
So I got a question for you, Sam. How much do you want to die with? Do you want to die with, you know, 5 million plus to give away, you know, to your like your kids or to my kids? Or do you want to die with zero and just like time it perfectly and be like, all right, I'm out? Where do you want to die?
I've never thought about a number, but I do think that the de-accumulation process would be scary. I don't know. I guess in a very selfish way, as long as I can maintain living the way that I'm living and doing what I'm doing, then I would see no reason to not be accumulating. Even like, you know, Warren Buffett, how much money does he have now? And he's like, well, if I just continue doing what I'm doing in 5 years, I'm going to have double. And when I have double, I can do so much more when I die by leaving it to charity or whatever. So I think as long as I'm still doing everything I want to do, I would say, let the money accumulate. I'll do something good with it. I don't want to leave my kids $20 million, but I'd like to leave them something small. But I would do, I think the opportunities down the road to maybe go to Mars, do space travel, upload your brain to a disc, and, you know, there's just going to be some crazy things that are available to the ultra wealthy. I see no reason to have put myself in a position to be able to do some of those things, as long as I'm not trading life on the way up. But right, I haven't made money in 6 years, 7 years. I've been living off interest and earnings, so investment earnings. So it's not like I'm in collecting a check every day.
Well, still not a bad life. No, it's not a bad, like, I think a lot of people would just dream to be in that position. And if anything, they might calculate and say, you know what, maybe instead of just living off the dividends and the interest, maybe I could do a drawdown, maybe not 4%. I mean, you know, 4% will last you another 30 years, plus or minus. But what if you just, you know, drew down 2%, you know, and that'll probably guarantee that it'll last another 60 years. And I would guarantee, Sam, you're not going to last another 60 years.
Even though, oh, Johnny, come on, man.
Am I it's that possible, bad? But
couple cups
yeah.
of coffee, no. A couple glasses of wine. I don't smoke. I drink.
You know what? The the expected lifespan, you know, can be what 90. It'll be what 96, 97. So theoretically, it is possible. But if I was a betting man, and I am, if I could put money down right now, and if you're gonna make it to 96, I would happily put down any amount.
My therapist would probably agree. That's why I'm moving to Spain, Johnny. Oldest lifespan. I'm gonna get in there and just coast, live in La Vida Loca. But I think I think listeners want to hear what your plan is after this, because you're right in that sweet zone where you could probably technically start living off the 4% rule.
Yep.
If you wanted to just stop earning, you're 39, but you're already doing, I mean, from the outside view, you're already living a really admirable and desirable lifestyle. So what's changed for you, or what's your plan reading all this? Like, do you have a number that you want to die with, or where you want to be?
Yeah. So now, like, I after even just reading the title, to be honest, I was like, you know what? He's right. Why accumulate so much and then just try to make it, you know, last forever? Like, the 4% rule really, like, it's almost based that in most cases, you'll actually never draw down. Not only does it not run out in 35 years, but in like 50% of the cases, you still have as much or maybe even more than you had, when you started. So I have realized, like, from reading this book, talking to Bill, that I should allow myself to see that number drop a bit. But I think right now I found that perfect balance where I could still accumulate. You know, I would really like to hit that 1 million just to write a book about it and, you know, and just have that as a life experience. But when I do hit that 1 million, do I want to try to get to 2 million or 3 million? Or do I want to start accumulating then, or just keep it the same? I think at that point, I would say I'd be okay with kind of just keeping it around that level and you know, starting to spend more and you know maybe fly business class once in a while, stay in some 5-star hotels, and enjoying life more.
If I was a betting man, I would say once you get to that level, you're going to want to get to 2 million. You're definitely not going to let it go. Once you have that million, you're not, and it goes to 900, you're going to be like, oh man, I'm so stressed, dude. Like, what is this? This is no way to live.
Yeah. No, it's true. Like, I think that's going to be really hard because, like, let's say I get to like exactly a million. Am I going to go out for a cup of coffee that day to celebrate? You know, some cake, some carrot cake? Maybe not, because then I'll have 9999.
Bill also mentioned that I think it was JP Morgan did all these studies about like the ultra wealthy and how they literally can't spend it down and they're just too old to go out and enjoy it. But even like when you're younger, you get to a certain amount of money, a single guy can really only spend $150,000 a year. Someone told me that before we sold our last business, and I was asking about the, you know, investing and stuff. And it's true. Like, you can only eat so much, date so much. Mm. Sometimes blowing that type of money doesn't even feel that good.
Because I'm sure people can just, like, you know, throw $1 million at a stripper, or, you know, buy a Lamborghini and crash it. But like, to actually spend that money, go out to eat, stay at nice restaurants, you know, that seems like a normal amount.
Yeah, so many transactions you can have in a day. And I think at some point too, if you're spending above that, you're blowing money, which you're exchanging money for experiences, which is good to some degree. But for people like you and me, Johnny, I know, like, we spend that type of money on kind of idiotic things. It's not rewarding. You just feel sorry in a way.
You feel stupid. Yeah. You feel like, why did I do that? Like, yeah. So yeah, this has been a really great interview with Bill Perkins, book. Like, just like, honestly, just the concept, just the title itself is worth its weight in gold. So if you guys want to check out the book, you can find it anywhere. It's called Dive Zero. But this interview really covered a lot of the key points. So I'm so happy Bill Perkins came on, and Sam, it was fun catching up.
Thanks very much. And thanks, Derek, for getting Bill Perkins join on the show. And thanks for all the Patreons for all the questions. And glad you were able to cover a lot of them, Johnny.
Yeah, thanks. And if you guys want to join our Patreon group, just go to investlikeaboss.com, click on Patreon or support the show. A couple of the perks are you get to know who the guests that are coming up are, so you can ask questions and we can relay them for you. And second, our quarterly updates are now in video format, just like this episode. So if you want to watch the video of this episode, go to our YouTube channel, look for Invest Like a Boss, and you can see our dashboards, our screenshots of what we invested in. And a lot has changed this quarter with ups and downs. Both Sam and I have made big investments, 50K plus investments. So if you guys are missing our quarterly updates and you want to know what Sam and I are personally invested in, what we've sold and what we bought, join the Patreon, because everything in there is exclusive to Patreon now. Just to be honest, because it's kind of uncomfortable sharing everything so publicly. So it's a Patreon only exclusive. And also it's a big thank you to our Patreons.
All right. Great. Awesome interview. Thanks again, Bill. And thank you all listeners. Sayonara from Steamboat, Colorado.
Nice. Enjoy some ski for me. See you guys.
Enjoy some surf for me, Johnny.
Will do.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.